We are up to part two of the Shach. Shach is of Shapsi HaKohen. Shapsi HaKohen from, he was in the city of Heleshoi. Heleshoi. Now, why does that make a difference? Because there's actually a story. We started mentioning last week that we just started. The Shach was definitely at odds many times in halacha with the Taz, but we all assume it's a Machanta Shel Torah and it's L'Shem Shemayim. As he writes himself, don't think I have any personal vendetta against the Taz. I just think this is the Emes of Shach. And therefore, he takes him to town on many, many points. And just to recap, what do we have? Many people don't know this. Didn't bring a Shulchan Aruch again. The Shach wrote his Pirush and Yerideya. They both came out the same year, Tuf Vav. Tuf Vav is 1240 plus 406, 1646. Now,
how does that work?
Whenever anything within this 5,000th, which most things until you get the Rishonim, the turn of that thousandth into the fifth, right? We are in Hey Tuf Shin Pei Beis. So what we call it is just Tuf Shin Pei Beis, right? Which is 782.
It was the secular year, 1240.
1240 CE equals 5,000. Whenever you see any Hebrew date, Tuf Vav, Tach, how do you know what Tach is? Tach V'tat, Tuf Ches. So, okay, 1240. It's the best historical tool you'll ever use for the rest of your life. Because any Hebrew day is like, oh yeah, and Tuf Shin Nun Ches.
1648.
Very good. You'll remember this for the rest of your life, 1240. I heard this in 10th grade from a Leibish Langer, and I've never forgotten it. 10th grade was?
Second, 1240 plus
1040. So, as follows. Now, so there's great stories about the Shach. We did a little bit of the styles. There's two different styles. The Yerideya is more halacha. It's more halacha, psuka, straight to the point. In Cheshem Mishpat, he's more mefalpel. He brings down a lot more out there and going through sugyas a little bit more. Reason being, he felt there was no need to go and write a halacha l'maisa sefer as much in Cheshem Mishpat, because Cheshem Mishpat had already the work of the Sma, the sefer Meir Esenayim, who was the Rishua Val Katz, who was the Drisha and the Prisha, same person. So he switched his style because he's looking to service the Torah world, not just get his name out there. Fine. So the stories are pretty cool because
in Yerideya there was no Sma, there was just a Taz, and he disagreed with him.
And he didn't know that the Taz was coming out, and they came out the same year. They both were printed in Tuf Vav. And then the entire—I haven't been able to clarify it, but again, I haven't stopped looking into it. What exactly was the back and forth? Shach comes out, Taz comes out. Taz writes a Daf Achron. If you look in the back, there's Daf Achron. The Daf Achron is coming against some sefer without naming it. Then what happens? The Shach comes along.
Wait, what kind of coming against? Like specific footnotes or just
deliberately? Someone writes and I disagree.
But point by point.
Yeah. No, pretty pointed.
So not against the sefer, but about points in the sefer.
Yeah. Well.
Okay.
Not between like me and you, that's semantics, right? Because that's against the sefer.
Yeah, but not like the Rambam saying the Rambam should never have written this.
No, because he didn't mention it by name. Okay? The Shach then writes Kuntres Achron, as well as Nekudas HaKesef, which is explicitly saying that Taz was mistaken, wrong, one after the other, again with an element of respect, because he calls the Nekudas HaKesef the Nekuda of silver, as opposed to the Turei Zov, the Taz. The cool part that we didn't mention last week was the Taz's grandson. Yeah, you heard about this?
No.
The Taz's grandson wrote something called, so after that, after the Shach really got last licks, he goes at him with Nekudas HaKesef and bombs away at the Taz. Now, the debate really ends there. 36. 36-year difference between the Taz and the Shach. The Shach wrote the Shach when he was 24. The Taz was already 60, one of the greatest renowned Rabbanim of the generation, and the Shach was 24. He had 18 Haskamas to his work, not too shabby, and you have to go and try to find them one by one and what they write about him, also not too shabby, but he was definitely a young Talmud Chacham going against the recognized, yeah.
What could he possibly know at age 26?
24. So everything he wrote in the Shach, he already knew. That much we know, right? By Shavuot Brachos, yeah. By Shavuot. Yeah, I don't know. So, again, these things are hard to fathom because they some Gedolim were not gifted with tremendous capabilities and plowed through. Others were. So that's it. Many of them had tremendous raw ability. There are geniuses out there, and it's a bigger nesayin to be a genius and actually capitalize beyond and to have perseverance when you can really sit in your laurels and just still be a genius. It's a bigger nesayin almost to be a genius than to not be a genius.
To be that young, know all this, and also know how to apply it.
Yeah.
Mishkal HaChassidus and what's a chumra, what's a kula.
Yeah. They were pretty immense. So, the cool part was, there was something called the Vad Arba Ratzos, which we've spent a full Sunday night talking about. What was the Vad Arba Ratzos? I'm going back to the...
I thought you said Vad
Arba Ratzos. Vad Arba Ratzos. Vad Arba Ratzos. The four lands. Five lands, four lands. It was part of the Polish kingdom, the greater Polish kingdom, which was one of the largest kingdoms of its time, and then turned into... The Ottoman Empire took over, and then the Austrian Empire, and then there were a lot of, you know, shifts, and many parts of Germany were part of France, and then switched back to Germany, and there was no such thing as Galicia. Galicia was right part of Poland, which is really Ukraine. Poland was most of Ukraine. A lot of these things, geography that we know of today, was nothing. It was not even close to similar to what it was in the 1600s. So, the Vat Arba Ratzos...
More like Ukraine today.
I don't even know. Yeah, I don't know. Oh, more like Ukraine today, yeah. Well said. So, the Vat Arba Ratzos comes together, and they were passing on the largest decisions plaguing Klal Yisrael. And they actually were a body that had binding power. They collected taxes from the Jews to then pay the kingdom. They had real taxation powers, cheirim powers, everything. The Marshal was on it, Shach was on it, Taz was on it. Anyone, it was everyone, the Marshal. Everyone talks about the Yerid, this great Yerid.
And,
yeah, expo that would happen where the Vad Arba Ratzos would meet. So one of these meetings, the Taz's grandson, Reb Yoel ben Reb God, grandson of the Taz, presents a sefer. I told you this.
Yeah,
I mentioned this by the Taz.
Yeah.
He presents a sefer saying the defense. It's called Megine Zahav. He's answering up all of the Nekudas HaKesev's questions. And he goes so far to say, and it doesn't pass, it's not befitting, that there should be such a young sefer coming against my grandfather, the Taz. And he got the Vav Arba Ratzos to formally paskin that halacha is kizokin, and anyone who has a shaila at hand between the Shach and the Taz, the Vav Arba Ratzos paskins, the halacha is like the Taz. The irony is, it still didn't work. Today, so I've seen a certain svarim that write, so back in Poland, really, they each claimed their stake. In Poland, halacha was more like the Taz, and Greater Lithuania was more like the Shach, but even that has changed. The normative taka for many, many Rabbanim and Bali Hoira is the Shach usually will beat the Taz. Which just comes to show you that there's a lot of everything needs to add the Shemaya, Filu Sefer Torah Shebehechel. Right? There's such a memra. Meaning everything needs to add the Shemaya, and some things cannot be explained logically. Why this one took hold and that one didn't. Why this Sefer is so popular when another Sefer written by an even bigger person didn't even get any readers. Why is that? There's a lot of Siyata Shmai involved. So that's... Now, there's cool stories about the Shach. Lots and lots of stories about the Shach. One thing we know is that he didn't live a long life. He lived till about 41, 42. There's another story that happened, interaction that happened with the Shach and the Magen Avraham. Again, there's multiple versions of the story, which means none of them might be true. Right? Someone told me there's a Ramchal in Derech HaHigoyim, right? The Book of Logic, who writes that when there's multiple versions of one memra or one story, it casts doubt on all of the versions. Because we then do not know, based on logic, we don't know based on logic if any of them are true. But there's a story with the Magen Avraham. The Magen Avraham came to town, or the Shach came to Magen Avraham's town in Gumbiner. And basically, the gist of the story is the Shach gave a shir, and shir klali. What else did they do when they came to visit, right? They went to the local shul, and people came to hear the gedolim, as we saw last week, for Basher Weiss. So, he comes to shir, and he poses a question, a tzarechi and gadol, no one could answer him. And the Malame, the little Cheder Rebbe, Rebbe Avram Abeli, who later was known as the Magen Avraham, tells one of his Talmidim what happened by the shir. He tells him the Shach's question. He says, go back and tell him X, Y, and Z. So he goes back to the Shach. The Shach says, who told you this? Let me speak with him. So he goes back to his Rebbe and says, the Shach wants to speak with you. Now again, varying versions of the story where they met, but this is definitely agreed upon. Some sort of interaction took place. He says, he goes and he meets with him, and he sits there for over an hour conversing with the Shach. So imagine your second grade Rebbe going and sitting down with Reb Chaim Kanievsky, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky cannot get enough conversing with him, spanning all areas of Torah. So you'd start to look at that second grade Rebbe a little bit differently. And that's when word got out about the Magen Avraham. And it was a slippery slope from there. He kind of got famous. He was asked to join the Beis Din in his local town, and he couldn't really hide anymore. And Baruch Hashem, we have the Magen Avraham. So there are those who claim that the Shach was, you know, accountable and was the one who, you know, exposed the greatness of the Magen Avraham. Another one, there's a famous story by Marcus Lehman. Again, these are just fun stories that may have happened, may not, but definitely great for bedtime. For sure, if you want to impart to your children great stories. But there's definitely a relationship. One of them are fact. There's a fact. The Panim Meiris, Reb Meir Eisenstadt from the city of Eisenstadt, was a relative of the Shach. That's not disputed. The dispute is, how are they related? So, there's a book called The Lost Princess. Anybody? Marcus Lehman?
I heard about the Shach's daughter being missing.
Oh, it was the Shach's daughter or the Shach's sister?
I heard his
name. So there's two opinions. Was it his daughter or his sister? Nafkamina, is the Panim Meiris his nephew or his grandson? And you'll see, because you'll see, because that woman who the story took place with was the Panim Meiris's mother. So there's some story, many say it was his sister, and his sister goes and through Tachvatat, there was a lot of displacement. Many Jews were displaced everywhere. So they could have wound up anywhere. The Shach was on the move, running. His sister was also on the move. They managed to survive. She wound up being a maidservant in some Jews, wealthy Jews' house. And the Shach was being hosted. He was still known as the Shach. He was being hosted in this wealthy man's house. He sits and he's learning, and he's sitting there with his niggin. Ay, 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 ay. And the maidservant stops and listens. And she's taken by his learning. She couldn't explain why. She goes over and she has the audacity to approach the Shach and said, my brother used to learn like that. And she says, what's your father's name? Meir. I'm Reb Shamsi ben Meir Ashkenazi. My father's Meir Ashkenazi. And what's your brother's name? Shapsi. That was his name. I'm Shapsi. And they reunite, or his daughter, or his sister. And what we know for sure is that the Panim Meiris actually was a child the host ends up, he just lost his wife, on the spot says, can I marry her? They get married. Yeah, the story can't get better, right? And then you say
so
to your kids,
his maidservant.
You bet.
Panamiris is the host.
What?
Panamiris is the host.
No, no, no. The Panamiris was the child from that union. The host and the maidservant get married and have a child, Meir, named after Reb Meir, the father of the shah. So either it was a grandfather or great grandfather.
And does not have dinner in the shivcha.
No, doesn't have dinner in the shivcha. And that's just a little bit. Again, there's so many great stories.
He's going to marry the maidservant once he finds out she has
yichus. You bet. That's a big lesson. You bet. So, what do we see? The shah definitely made his mark in his 41 years of life. He made it through, survived tach v'tach. He ended up becoming one of the greatest. Yeah, he also wrote, I forgot one sefer last week. He wrote Shachan Yerdei, wrote Shachan Choshen Mishpat. He wrote Tach V'Koyin, the on the sugya in Bar Metzia. And we'll stop here. Got one sefer. What else did he write? Gvuras Hanashim.
He wrote something else
about a separate paper. Megillas Afa. He wrote a diary about Tach V'Tach. Megillas Afa, he actually wrote as well. And I think that caps it.
Not the Shachal. No.